Welcome, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting to order at 6:02 PM. We do have a quorum. Do we have a quorum? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We do?
Yep.
Okay, 6, 7. Okay, great. Pledge of Allegiance. Stand up with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Do I have a couple of comments on actions?
I don't know. I think that's the one thing I didn't.
I know.
I did not print it either.
I have it up here. Well, you know, we'll take a couple minutes for public comments. This meeting is specifically to address a couple of items that financial items that we just want to make sure we are fully all informed on. That's why we decided to have it as a separate meeting so we can make sure that everyone can ask all their questions. And if we don't have all the information in front of us, we can get more. So it's mostly about where we stand financially, how we're growing, and where we're going to be going in the future. So right now, if there's anyone who has any public comments, anyone from other than the board members who have a few public comments, I'll give you a couple minutes, raise your hand, and we will let you address those. But otherwise, we're going to just get into our order of business. Anything?
And Anna Maria and everyone, for the record, I'll just note that nobody has emailed me with any additional comments for circulation to the board.
Okay, great. Thank you, Valerie. Okay, we don't see any hands up or anything. Okay, great. Well, I'm going to just, as I said, we sent out a lot of information for everyone to digest. And doesn't mean you have to know it all now, but we're going to run through it with Jeff and Mr. Pappas, who is actually, he ran over to the ring ceremony. He will be with us shortly. But we want to we just want to make sure that we have addressed everyone's concerns and that everyone knows where we stand with the school. Nothing's off the table. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Jeff and let him just start.
I'm so sorry.
As long as it isn't the Saints come marching in, that's okay.
Thank you, Anna Maria.
Yeah, I think, do we want to start with the mission? I think what we're going to
say
I think what we're going to do is we sent you out a draft strategic plan, an overview of the strategic plan. So if you all want to just pull that up, I think we're just going to go over that and highlight that. So Jeff's going to help us with that.
Sure. We'll probably skip down to get to page 6. We'll really talk about sort of the pillars of success that...
Are we skipping so that when Wes comes to, do you want him to jump back up and do the level set of like the
mindset
high level?
Yeah, we could do that. Because the background for everything that the school will be measuring on the success in the future, which will be, you know, over not just the next 3-5 years, we're talking 20, 50, 100 hopefully, is really based on having self-sustainability. So that's the main focus and theme throughout the strategic plan, is ways that the plans that we can achieve now that will continue that sustainability going forward. So on page 6, we talk about the main pillars of success is what it's called. And it becomes the sort of the 5 themes that the strategic plan is based on, and that there's descriptions of both from an overview standpoint, a detailed description, and some key indicators that we'll use to measure some of the success. I just do want to add that this draft is truly in an overview format. So more of the what and the why. The how would be another version of this, more detailed, probably upwards of 50 pages. So we talk about the first one being the student success aspect, which says we ensure that every student is challenged and engaged while providing multiple pathways for student success by broadening opportunities, encouraging productive struggle, and promoting excellence in Greek language, mathematics, arts, athletics, and service to the community. OCS will eliminate opportunity gaps so all students can achieve success. So within that, the bullets below are the descriptions, or say basically, these are statements that will be the goals of this specific pillar, the student success pillar. And maybe Anna Marie would be better at the Greek portion of of student success.
Take a step.
No. I refuse. So for the description for student success, we talk about ensuring all students are academically challenged, fostering the mastery of bilingual education in both English and Greek, providing multiple pathways to graduation, engage in activities that reflect college and career opportunities, access to effective curriculum, external programs, and life experience lessons, applying a Socratic method in a democratic collaborative platform for the benefit of the individual and for the community with a focus on student-driven learning, implement the principles of Hellenic Paideia in order to foster individual excellence in service of improving the functioning of the community poli. Provide students in grades 6 through 12 an opportunity to participate in our athletics program. Implement service learning projects for all students in grades 3 to 12. And provide benchmarks and support the improvement and growth on standardized metrics. So that we feel is an attempt to be all-encompassing that really focuses on how the academics and programming at Odyssey Charter would really lead to student success. And within that, you can read that there are some key performance indicators that would be a base to measure the success of how the school itself is performing for that structure.
Do we have any questions so far? Does anyone have anything they want to add, or is there anything you could think that might be missing from this that we'd want to add to it? It's a work in progress. We figured it's something to start with to give us some direction.
Well, I guess just a general question, Jeff. You know, who's involved in the development of this?
So for this draft, it was developed by Mr. Pappas, myself, and other members of the academic leadership team.
So there are no board members contacted to discuss the development of this document?
We just came involved. Aaron and I sat down and went over just each point today.
Well, it's different reviewing it, but it's different being involved in the development and construct of some of the planning.
Well, that's why we're having this now, Elias, is to see if there's anything that, I mean, because I think it's a good foundation. And anything to add to it that you might think that we would want to add to
it. No, listen, I'm not debating the quality of the document. What I'm debating is who's involved in the development of this and who's leading the development of this. And the administration knew very well that this was a partnership between the board and the leadership of the school. And it wasn't a one-sided document that folks should just start putting out there without consulting or discussing it with anybody.
No. I don't think that's what, I think they were waiting for us to make our decision. In that time, they created this on their own because they knew that they had some parameters that they needed a construct for. So it's just in conversation that Elia said, well, I happen to have a document that we can start with. It's a starting point that maybe we can further develop together. That's how it came about. It's not like anyone said, hey, here's a draft, use this.
Well, that's exactly what happened. They said, hey, here's a draft.
No. Elias, the direction came from Anna Maria and me for them to put their thoughts down on paper because they've spent a substantial amount of time thinking about it. The board has not put together or engaged a strategic planning facilitator. We've been talking about it for a while. Management team has been thinking about it and having conversations. So we asked, please put your thoughts on paper, give us your best draft of how you think this should go. And then the board will pick it up, which we're doing now. No one's asking to approve this meeting or the document tonight or anything like that. This is the board beginning partnership with the foundational thinking that the management team has put together.
It is what it is. I think you and Anna Marie should have inserted some board members into the discussions and the process as this thing was starting off and moving forward.
That's what we're doing now. All we did was ask them to put their thoughts on paper, and now we're going to figure out who on the board wants to plug in where so that we can actually build out a plan. This is not Odyssey's strategic plan. This is management team's documented thinking of what they would like to engage with the board on.
And that's why we're brainstorming today to see, are there, you know, what else, what could be missing? Is there something that you wanted to add? Are there other parameters that you would want to add to this section? Or is there some other way you would want to construct it?
Well, I didn't know this was couched as a working group meeting. I thought this was, hey, here's our thoughts and plans. I mean, if you want to have a discussion about what needs to take place, that's a longer discussion and conversation, I think.
This was originally to review the TURF documentation, and when this draft became available, we thought it would be good grounding to have the management team take us as a whole board through their thinking. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but I think the ask is going to be, we received some documents yesterday or earlier this week on the TURF. We can ask questions tonight. We'll have another 2 weeks as a whole board to consider that and vote at our regularly scheduled meeting in April. So since this was available, we thought it would be good to go through it in addition to letting everyone ask questions on the TURF project specifically.
It's just a starting point, Elias.
I don't know. Well, that's great, but I don't think we should be going through and marking up this document at this point in time. I think if we just want to hear what they have to say, they can go ahead and provide that.
See if there's anything you would like, if you have any questions on it right now. It's mostly to get in the mindset of where the administration is and where it's going.
That'll help you in review, right? So this is letting them provide perspective.
We don't expect to spend a lot of time on this. It's mostly just going through it, highlighting what the understanding is, how they got to this place. We will take it and we will dissect it and we will add our input at another time. But this is mostly just to get behind it so we understand and where they're coming from, when they're coming up with the decisions and the questions and the asks that they're making. So with that said, does anyone have any questions about this first section, the student success, about the way Jeff read it from the page? Any insight, any additions, anything that you might think might be missing from it at this point? Okay.
No, and it, like when we're saying, okay, it's not, this is final, this just, yeah. Is there anything at top of mind right now?
Something that stands out to you as blatantly wrong or off track?
Did we want Elias to sort of step back and talk about like the sustainability and sort of the grounding of why we're...
Sure. Welcome, everybody. I haven't quite solved the problem of being cloned in two places at once. But I was at the senior ring mass senior ring ceremony. We don't have a mass. Went back to my Sally's talk. It was wonderful. It is a wonderful event for our seniors to honor our seniors. So thank you everybody for coming today. A lot of there's a lot of obviously important matters that we're trying to address at the school, and systematically having an organized approach is something that's key and essential for us to find success moving forward. Now, to kind of frame this document, we have in another document that was circulated earlier, and something that I addressed in the previous board meeting where I spoke a little bit of the narrative and the background. I want to provide a little bit more, zoom out a little bit more for a second, and just kind of state exactly where we are as an organization and what we're trying to do moving forward. So as an organization, when I arrived here and we were still moving towards the sustainability level that we're looking at. So the big theme over here today is sustainability. And I would characterize the school about 3 years ago as being emerging. And what we're trying to do is transition from an emerging school to a sustainable school. And the difference between that is that when you go from emerging, you're kind of moving in small focuses a little bit at a time, because you're taking something that was a small concept and you're expanding it. And what we're moving to now is sustainability. Sustainability means that you have systems in place for the long-term success of the organization. And in the process that we've been going through over the last 2 years, we have identified things that within the organization would be key to the long-term sustainability of our organization. And in the first lens that we look at is, well, how do we make sure that we are fiscally viable, right? And continually be fiscally viable? What do we do? What steps do we take to do that? And then as a result of that, as we're doing that, what do we need to do in order to make ourselves competitive in an emerging marketplace that's becoming ever more competitive? And what can we leverage about the physical design of our campus, the offerings that we have in terms of innovations, the incredible staff that we have that works at the school, to be able to outwardly create something that's not only sustainable, but is very, very competitive? And so in our approach to become competitive, we in our actions that we've taken that I spoke to in the previous session, there have been a lot of moves that have been made organizationally that have positioned us right now to be in a place where we can take a step forward and really take the necessary steps, in my humble opinion, to become long-term sustainable. So in creating this plan, the big vision was, how do we create a sustainable model? And what you'll see in this particular plan is that there are these specific areas that we're tackling that we call the pillars. And what we did, the thought process that we went through to get to this, is we reviewed the 2016 to 19 strategic plan. We incorporated small aspects of it into here based on what indicators were achieved, what indicators weren't necessarily aligned to sustainability, or were vaguely defined in such a way that we were not able to quite figure out what would be the pathway forward for that. And in the process of doing this and commenting a little bit on emerging schools, one of the struggles or the kind of the areas where emerging schools need to kind of identify is, what in the process of us going from emerging to becoming sustainable have been the roadblocks to our success? And one of the roadblocks to our success has been that we haven't been able to completely enroll the school in the aspect that we wanted to. And in the last meeting, I spoke specifically to the idea that from the perspective of the high school, we had a severely under-enrolled high school. And as a result of that, that challenges the long-term sustainability. And when you add that to other external factors, including our attrition rates, our market competitiveness, our competitive edge, the facilities that we currently have in comparison to what other organizations have, our approach to all aspects of organizational sustainability, trying to make sure that we retain teachers, trying to make sure that we proper enroll the school, we fell short on some of our metrics. So when we started to really look at this stuff, the first thing that we prioritized was, we need to create a plan on how we are going to be able to become sustainable. And last year, we created a plan and we ratified the plan. And the plan was the modification that we did, which would allow us to, in a short term, all struggle a little bit in ways that we are all very uncomfortable with. And I very much acknowledge that the struggle is real and it hasn't come without some very difficult aspects to the growth. A lot of them have to do with just, well, how do you create the proper culture when you're integrating so many students? How do you make sure that the quality of your programming and the rigor is where you want it to be? How do you make sure that you're able to continue to recruit at this level? And all of those things are valid questions. But what I'd like to believe, and by saying like to believe, based on the data that we are already seeing, is that we are making a difference and that we are sustainable, and or at least moving towards sustainability, and that we are becoming more stable as an organization. But in the process of doing that, there are some growth steps that have to occur. We acknowledge that there are discipline issues that we need to address very, very specifically and strategically as we work through this tightening of our belts in order to get to where we want to get. But in part of doing that strategically as an organization, what we did is we positioned ourselves in such a way that at least financially, we are completely viable now. So much so, as we've addressed in previous meetings, that now we're in a position where we are investment grade as an organization. That is an incredible accomplishment. And we did it while continuing our slow growth model, while maintaining a very high quality of education, while outpacing the recovery from COVID by 40 to 80% academically compared to everywhere else in the state. All of these things did happen during this time. So it isn't a matter of acknowledging that there are other things that we need to worry about, but it is a matter of us acknowledging that we have taken the necessary steps in order to position ourselves properly. So now I ask humbly that we have a sense of urgency about this. We all know that the market conditions are constantly changing. I spoke to a couple market conditions changing recently. For those of you that maybe don't know, the dollar being the gold standard is in jeopardy now as well. There are other things that are causing economic instability. We have wars on multiple fronts. All of these things may sound like they don't matter, but they absolutely matter because it impacts the way that the funding formulas work within our states. As a result of that, right now, this organization is in a position to refinance its bonds in a very innovative way. And that's in large part to the efforts of Jeff, which I applaud for all of his efforts to get us to that position. And in large part to all of the models that we put together in terms of creating a sustainable budget moving forward and looking at a plan moving forward that allows us to be long-term sustainable. We can say with confidence that despite the fact that there could be economic uncertainty, the organization is well positioned to maneuver as a result of that. And as a result of these things that are coming up now with respect to the strategic plan, which by the way, is a necessary component of any sort of refinance or new money ask. I say that because I don't want, and I wasn't here earlier, I don't know anything what's happened, or maybe what's been discussed outwardly. I don't want anybody to think that I single-handedly, here comes the sheriff and he's gonna like tell us where we go next. There is a sincere urgency to move in the right direction and to provide the opportunity and accept the opportunity that's in front of us. So in making this strategic plan, part of it is because it is a requirement of any formal application for new monies or refinancing of monies. And we don't need to talk about the reasons why we haven't had the strategic plan since 2019. Quite frankly, that's irrelevant at this point. And this is just a framework. So what I've created here with my team is a framework that has key specific performance indicators in it. It does not include strategies or desired outcomes. In the process of going through this now and having some sort of model to go on, it allows us to be able to now hone in on what strategies does the board desire for us to use in order for us to achieve these things. In the process of creating this document, we looked at public schools that were successful. We looked at private schools that were successful. We looked at charter schools that were successful, and we looked across states to do this research. And then in doing that, we pooled that with the current strategic plan that was in place, well, technically in place because we haven't had one since the last one, to be able to come up with a pathway forward that was synergistically consistent with what the steps we've taken to become financially viable. So that's kind of the thought process that went through this. It also comes from tremendous stakeholder feedback in the form of coffee and chats, in the form of panorama surveys, in the form of stakeholder meetings with different levels of stakeholders within our staff, in the form of student meetings. Am I leaving anything out?
Parent council.
We have a parent council that also advises us consistently on these things. All of that stakeholder feedback was considered in creating the draft, this first draft of this document. And what we did is we wanted to make it in such a way that allows for us to be able to capture all of the things that we want to do while allowing us the flexibility to be able to hone in on the things that we collectively agree upon from our experiences. Like, what do you hear as board members compared to what do I hear? What does the teacher see? What does a counselor see? What does the student feel like? And, you know, to add to that, we do walkthroughs of buildings. We do unannounced and announced walkthroughs of buildings. We look at the educational model. How is it being executed? We have other organizations that come in and review our organization and give us feedback. We just had an organization from North Carolina over here for two consecutive days who I can say is blown away by the program that we have over here They were unbelievably surprised at how we could do this at such a large scale. That's a testament to the people that work here. It's a testament to the students that we've been able to have, testament to the teachers that we have, a testament to the board for allowing us the flexibility to be able to do what we need to do. So what we did in this program, and I think you highlighted this already, is we highlighted five pillars of success moving forward. I think you went over the first one, which was student success. And I do want to qualify that what we try to do in this is create a real quick capture statement, like an action statement, and then give some descriptions of what that would look like. Again, this is not the how. This is just basically the why, and then how are we going to make sure we hold ourselves accountable to this? All of it is up for alteration or whatever the case may be, or shifting. The numbers are not arbitrary. The goals are not arbitrary. They're based on interactions that I had with multiple stakeholders in terms of the realistic nature of achieving these goals in the current model that we have, but certainly open for whatever feedback we want. So we talked about that particular one, but overall, as we go through all of these, what I'd like us to consider is that all of it was done under the auspices of trying to create a long-term sustainability for the school so that I don't have to be here for it to be sustainable. You don't have to be here to be sustainable. We have the formula in place and we know that we can put our heads to sleep at night knowing that we've done the right thing and we've set this organization up for success moving forward. And you will notice there's a lot of embedding of Hellenistic values and Hellenic values of Hellenic education within, not only in word, but in also in deed. You know, we've kind of grounded ourselves as being the Philotimos school, and that's such a beautiful word that we talk about because it's so all-encompassing of who we want to be as human beings, you know, and being able to identify the fact that we want to bring joy to kids. We want to create high academic standards and excellence. We want to give without asking anything in return and instilling that value in our students. We want to create leaders. We want to create superior athletes as part of the program because those are the values of Hellenic education. And so in doing that, that's everything that we looked at when we tried to put this together. By no means is this a comprehensive document. It's got plenty of things that need improvement, but it is a grounding document for us to help us take steps forward to do this. If there are no other questions on context.
And one thing that I want to call out, because you mentioned viability and sustainability, and I just think it's really important to think about the difference, right? So viability, we can survive.
Right.
Sustainability is we're strong, we're ongoing, we have long-term capability, because sometimes I think we hear viability and it's, oh, well, we're okay. Because now we're viable. It's very different from having the foundation and planning and ability to execute to where you can withstand some of the uncertainty, you have academia move out and it's fine. And we're able to sort of roll with punches and things like that. So that's just at least the lens that I was reading it as we were kind of going through it, and just wanted to call
that. I appreciate that. And I also would add to that by saying that we need to remind ourselves of the decision making that was made in order to get us where we are. I like to give credit to all of the organizational leaders that decided to purchase the Barley Mills Plaza. It's a brilliant real estate transaction. And it has positioned ourselves very well today as a supporting piece to be able to achieve our goals. Having this real estate and the value of this real estate absolutely is contributing to our ability to refinance loans right now and be a viable candidate for new funding formulas. In addition to that, I would also like us to consider the fact that as an organization, we chose to purchase Barley Mills, and it has all of these buildings on it. So we, in order for us to be sustainable, we must occupy the buildings. So sometimes the way that I like to water that down a little bit and make it a little bit simpler to understand is that I don't think necessarily that our focus should be on the number of students that we have in total. Our focus should be on the number of students we have within a cohort. So in other words, you can have 22 students in the classroom, 23 students in the classroom, 21 students in the class. I'm already parched. I don't know how you recognize that already, but thank you for that. I appreciate it. You can have that, but really what this is about is that it's not necessarily that you have 2,500 students, and it's not necessarily that we're not filling the vision necessarily of our founders and we want to be tight and closed. It's more about like we have a space, we want to properly occupy it, we want to be long-term sustainable, so we can hit these targets in order to do that while also keeping the quality of what we want by keeping the class sizes a little bit lower. And that's part of this, what we like to call expansion. I'd like to shift the word to sustainability, not expansion, because really that's what we're talking about. We're talking about making long-term sustainability. So it doesn't necessarily matter if you have 5 cohorts, 6 cohorts, 7 cohorts, 8 cohorts, the model must become sustainable in such a way by making sure that as we go through this very difficult process right now over the last 3 years, 1 year is already gone, we got probably 2 more years ahead of us of this, we are providing the proper supports in order for us to create that sustainability moving forward. From like a business lens, I also like to say it like this, and again, maybe it'll resonate, maybe it won't, but so I used to have franchises, math learning centers. They were called Mathnasium. You may know them, you may not. When I opened up a Mathnasium learning center, I didn't open it up with 5 chairs and 1 desk. I opened it up with 80 chairs and 20 desks, because we want to aspire to be that school. So how does that relate to what I'm saying over here? It's, well, we have all of these buildings to occupy. We should occupy our buildings. We do that through the enrollment that we have, but we must maintain the quality of education by being very focused on teacher to student ratio, class size, making sure that we have really good, positively reinforcing behavioral policies to allow for our teachers to be able to teach what they want to teach. And these are struggles that we have right now that I'm speaking to. Specifically, we struggle with some of our students that are coming in, because, you know, when we've had students that have been away and at home in different scenarios, in many cases trauma, obviously they're bringing that trauma to school. And if you were locked in trauma for 2 consecutive years, you can imagine what you're getting in return. And so I understand and I acknowledge the fact that if we don't do this in such a way that we really focus on keeping our class sizes relatively consistent and we provide the proper instructional support and behavioral support for the students to thrive, that it's going to be even harder as we move through the sustainability component. And there's a lot of back work that's being done specifically for next year, because I feel that we've all learned a heck of a lot this year from what we've seen. The types of behaviors that we've seen are not consistent with what we've seen in the past. And to Anna Maria's point, I've spent tremendous amount of time with other superintendents and district leaders, and have found very consistent troubling behaviors that are happening across the state and nationally. But to the level that we say that, we say that as a factor, that doesn't excuse the fact that we must be very aggressive and strategic about how we deal with this as an organization. And I'm happy to extrapolate on a lot of those actions that we're taking for next year, very significant ones to be able to, you know, lower the teacher to student ratio, offer better behavioral support systems for our teachers, change programming in such a way that allows for the students to become more self-regulated by actually teaching self-regulation as a course. I know that sounds like, why would we teach that? We have to. We have to teach, at this point, we have to teach self-regulation as part of a larger social emotional learning component that we're looking at as an organization. So I don't want to digress too much into that, but again, I'm trying to give as much context as I can as to why we are where we are, why now, why, what thought process is going through as we go through this modification. Because I remember very well in December of 2021, where we said we are approving this modification, but we're not necessarily approving in this meeting the approach, like how the enrollment is going to work. And I'm more than happy to talk through exactly what that looks like. But I do want us to consider the fact that if we do not enroll the school properly, we are not only not sustainable, we're not viable.
And those are, I think, the points that we need to address today. And that's why I think let's go over this, the highlights of this, and then we'll go over the financial aspects and how, you know, where we need to be.
Right.
Okay.
So I guess we move to INET 7, which for those of you that don't, no, that means ever to excel or ever to grow. And in the component over here, as it relates to student success you guys talked about, now we talk about knowing thyself, which basically means like, and we just had a leadership training on this as well. It is, and I love what was said in the leadership training that we just did. It said, it has nothing to do with you, but everything to do with you, right? It has nothing to do with you, but everything to do with you. And part of that is like knowing yourself as an educator, knowing yourself as a board member, knowing the student knowing themselves, parents knowing themselves, the community knowing themselves in such a way that we are able to leverage our keen, unique skills in order to create a functional and successful society moving forward. So in that summary statement that we have for this one, it says create an environment that fosters the growth of the whole child. Odyssey will nurture and support all students' intellectual, physical, mental, and social emotional growth in healthy, safe, and supportive learning environments. That speaks specifically to being able to understand how do we leverage those skills, the individual skills, in order to move us forward. In the process of doing this, we identify four specific factors that we'd like to focus on. One is to create safe, inclusive learning environments that promote personal well-being. That speaks very specifically to some of the discipline components on a little bit of a higher level. We would like to provide professional development to employees that fosters the concept of reflective practitioner, INET 7, fosters a sense of ongoing growth, INET 7, and improvement, and addresses the implicit and explicit bias fostering the enhancement of our cultural competencies and inclusivity. So here lies a very important diversity, equity, and inclusion component where we're specifically addressing the fact that we all as human beings have growth to do with our implicit and explicit biases, and that we need to be addressing that systematically in what we do. Implement a social emotional program that promotes healthy relationships and mental well-being of our students. And I just alluded to that in some of the things that we're planning for next year. And promote an overall school culture that leverages the diverse and unique talents and attributes of its stakeholders to drive higher levels of cultural competency. We have some performance indicators in there. Would you like me to go over them? I kind of just...
I think everybody's read them. I think we should just go over highlights. This, like we said, this is just a guideline and it's mostly to give everyone an idea of where we stand.
So do we have any, would anybody like to pose any questions on the goal and then the descriptions of the indicators?
Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna move to probably, if not one of the top ones, a very, very important piece, I know that teachers are leaving the field at alarming paces as a result of not necessarily being engaged. We hear of the quiet quitting. And so we want to systematically address that in such a way that makes our staff find joy in the process of being here with our organization. So generally we want to attract, hire, and retain highly qualified and diverse employees. In this area, you'll see a pretty robust description as there are very specific things that we want to look at. We want to be able to develop a strong recruitment process to attract highly qualified employees and bolster our commitment to a diverse workforce. I think this is such an important piece. I'm going to speak very, very quickly about this because it does impact the culture in a school. When students can see people that they can identify with, whether it's male-female relationships or simply ethnic diversity, it does improve the behavioral culture of a school and an organization. If the numbers that we have in the school do not reflect the Newcastle numbers that we recruit, then we find ourselves in a position of deficit in respect to us being able to offer what we need to offer. So we need to be very strategic about how we do that. Implement a process by which all teachers are certified in their content area and or discipline. This is a forward-thinking idea of making sure that we have 100% of our teachers being highly qualified and our staff highly qualified. Right now, I think the benchmark is 70%, by the way, in Delaware. Am I right? I think it's about 70%. So we want to be at 100% the whole time. Continue collaborative relationships between OCSEA and OCS administration and the board of directors. We believe that's a key piece to making sure that we're able to continue to foster that sustainability that we're talking about long-term. Evaluation processes providing actionable feedback for all staff. So this is a large area that we are focusing on organizationally to make sure that the key word here is actionable. So we can quickly move and pivot to the direction that we need to in an appropriate way to make sure that we have a very engaged workforce. It also comes from feedback from stakeholders that we specifically need to make sure that we're doing that. Employees are included, respected, and supported. We've heard that consistently through all of our feedback mechanisms. Information is readily accessible to all staff in order for them to do their jobs effectively. This is a communication piece that we have identified consistently for several years that has been an issue for us, and we need to be very strategic about how we deal with that. Visionary leadership is demonstrated while supporting high expectations that balance the needs of all stakeholders. That means that we're mission and vision driven and that everything that we do is embedded in that philosophy. Create a work environment that promotes long-term retention and future career. We consistently are looking at ways to improve the staff culture in such ways. This could be through, whether it's through events, whether it's the way that we approach our calendar. We've been very systematic in the way that we write our calendar so that there are strategic breaks embedded in the schedule in such a way that teachers have opportunities to be able to recharge their batteries and staff have opportunities to be able to recharge their batteries. The schedule this year, I may so humbly say, is probably the best schedule Odyssey has ever had. It's been very strategic and it follows research that indicates when the peaks and valleys are throughout a school year. We've been strategic about adding those breaks right at those moments so that we can keep the mental well-being of our staff and our students at the as optimal position as we can. Create a work environment. I think we talked about this again.
You don't have to read.
Okay.
You want to just wait, right? You have to read every bullet, but voiceover.
Okay. I'll try. I don't remember it all either.
It's fine.
I'll use the bullet points to provide more context. Obviously, I just spoke to this a few moments ago, making sure that we have proper support staff, right? So that our teacher to student ratios are correct. So that if we're in the food service department, we have the right number of food servers on the lines, that we think strategically about the way that we make our schedule so that we have the sustainability within the way that we're doing things so that we don't have staff too spread out, which is something that's happening right now. And we're revamping for next year, things of that nature. Provide opportunities to staff to inspire lifelong learning. Through professional development and academic achievement. This is going to be an ask. We've talked about this at this level several times, like really rethinking how we use our opportunity funds for our teachers to attain higher levels of education and certifications, because we're asking that all teachers and staff be certified. What questions do we have on that?
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, it's only two more. I'm sorry. I'm going to try to be like more efficient in my
time. Okay.
But I do want to provide as much context as possible. These are serious, heavy decisions that we have to make. So.
And people can like email questions or comments.
Right.
And,
or meet with me, schedule a meeting with me. Happy to meet with you personally too.
We have to pull together groups to right. dig in more.
Create sustainable and improved system-wide operations to meet the needs of Odyssey's expanding student population, complete campus improvement projects that enhance the overall student experience, and provide a focal point for our community. I think the key words here are making sure that we're able to use and enhance so that the overall experience of students is achieved and we become the focal point of the community. Those are really, really big, while we're also meeting the needs of all of our community members. So a lot of what we have in store and what Jeff will talk about specifically as it relates to campus improvements is so that we can become the focal point of the community and serve the needs of all of our families. So in doing that, we're looking at making sure that our resource allocation as it relates to students is very intentional. How do we allocate our resources is very intentional. We want to make sure that we have a very state-of-the-art facility that allows for our students to be able to be high performers and achievers. We want to make sure that we're using data to drive our instructions for best practices. We want to make sure that we're using, we're also trying to include enterprise-level thinking so that leverages the resources for our students while also serving the needs of the entire community. And so part of the facilities improvement is specifically doing that. So as you're well aware with some of these things, there are specific plans, and Jeff will talk to some of those as well. And we can answer questions at a later time. But I do believe that information has been shared. I welcome questions on that one. We can do a lot better this time.
It's a short one.
This is Val. I think overall, this document has been incredibly helpful, and I applaud everyone who contributed in making it. My only feedback on this section in particular, and maybe it's something you might want to consider embodying elsewhere too, is maybe having an analysis of just the more of the financial risks that are involved. And maybe this will be something that we get, that we discuss in depth as Jeff provides more of an overview of the financials. But it'd be helpful to know what happens if we were to default any of our credit facilities. What things would have to happen for that occurrence to take place and so forth. I think, you know, the goals and the performance metrics are helpful, but I think, you know, a thoughtful risk analysis might be too.
And thank you for that. That's very accurate. And Jeff is more than prepared to answer this question, because a lot of what we're looking at does not place the organization in any more risk than it currently would be in, if that makes sense. As a general statement.
I think the other side is, what's the risk if we don't do X, Y, Z, right? It's like if we don't focus on, I don't have a good example, but one of the things here, what's the potential outcome?
Right, because Aaron speaks to a very important point. Time is of the essence, and I've talked about several times. What happens if we don't do this? And that's an important piece. I appreciate that. Thank you, Valerie. I'm going to move on to community outreach and partnerships. This is kind of the last major bullet point. In this one, it's basically establishing a thriving campus community that's an integral member and contributor to its local, national, and global communities. So basically, we want to be a contributor on all levels. There are a lot of areas where we're already doing this, and I applaud the organization to do this. And some of this has come from our previous plan, strategic plan. So there are partnerships that we have, for example, in Greece with universities over there that allow for us to become global partners and part of a global community. We are exploring now partnerships across states. Like I mentioned, we had North Carolina come out yesterday and explore that partnership as well. We are exploring more partnerships with the Delaware Department of Education. I'm currently on the Superintendent Study Council, specifically on reform of the funding formula. So we're continuing to do that and exchange best practices, making sure that also the charter voice is being heard specifically as it relates to the way that we are funded in comparison to public schools that are district public schools. We're building more collaboration and communication with community leaders. We have some new service learning projects that are about to be rolled into our program as well, so that we're also outreaching in our community. You all know about the Green Initiative as well. That is expanding and proliferating as a program, which is a wonderful piece of outreach. You know, also from Ms. Ginelli, what she's able to do with the food bank and being able to provide more sustainability for that as well. So it's not an acute response, but rather more of a comprehensive response to tackling, hunger and food insecurity. We want to be able to make more partnerships with other educational institutions. We're working with the University of Delaware now and the Biden Institute. So that's also in the first of its development stage. We also want to make sure that we have, you know, the campus that provides the resources addressing the needs of the entire Wilmington community, Newcastle, Delaware, and neighboring states. That's kind of the goal that we have in this particular initiative, is to really be that community beacon. What questions do we have from that section?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think that was very comprehensive. I think now the meat and potatoes starts. Jeff, I don't know if you want to, I don't know how we want to approach this, but I know a lot of the questions that I get fielded is, all right, we had the modification and yes, we voted on it last year, but why do we need to grow now? What's the impetus in having us, you know, the growth that you have planned and where are we going?
Sure. So I'll try to be as high level as possible without getting too technical in some of the, what can be accounting jargon in some of the financial metric aspects. But I believe enrollment growth was actually always a part of the last charter renewal from 2019, I believe. Now, obviously that's been adjusted since then as we formalized last year. There was a lot of factors that changed the calculus for how we do things. So obviously the largest factor that probably preempted the modification last year was that there was going to be a significant revenue decrease from rental income as far as what we use on the campus. So that was the premise of pivoting as an organization from an operational standpoint of how we'd be able to sustain financially given that loss. So the four-year projection that was provided kind of speaks to the continued growth that from an overall standpoint that was approved by the state at that time. Another big piece to consider is one of the metrics that we have from both the state and our investors is our coverage of facilities expense by net revenues. So basically a debt service ratio metric that we need to meet. Because of the sheer size of our debt service, we essentially need our operational expenses or budget to be at a certain level for it to continue to be a sustainable model. There are certain metrics that we need to hit both to meet the state minimum and then again to meet our investor metrics. In the term sheet I provided from EFF, which we talked a little bit more in depth about who EFF was and what they can offer for us and why now for us, one of the metrics they had in there was a debt service coverage ratio of 1.2%, of which the school hasn't been at in a while. It still currently isn't at, but the four-year projection talks about how we get there. And that enrollment number is the path.
Where are we at now with debt service?
About 1.1, which pretty much meets the metrics that we need and have met over the last 2 or 3 years, which is, you know, the first time we've had all green as far as our financial metrics go with the state, and why I think we've become attractive as an investment target from both the public and private sectors. So the four-year projection that I provided continues that slow growth until it gets to the point where you know, the end of our charter, which is the end of school year 26-27, I believe. In a similar projection where pretty much all things are equal. Now, what that projection model does is it does take into account variable rates. So some costs are fixed, i.e. debt service. But as inflation rises or costs rise and the number of students rise, obviously number of staff members increases, things like utilities increase, your trash service to everything. There's a variable aspect to adding more students. And so this projection takes that into consideration. If we were to back down the projected number of students to the minimum that we could have over the next 2 or 3 years, I think it was really only 2 years that I did it for, based on our modified charter, which we are sort of bound to by the state at this point, you can go above or below by 5% without needing an additional modification to the charter. We failed to meet our debt coverage ratio until the fourth year. And then we also don't meet our days of cash on hand metric, and that decreases year over year over year over year, to the point where.
And what does that mean in non-accounting people person language?
It would mean that we likely would fail to meet the metrics of the state. And with that consistent, we'd likely find ourselves under formal review. We've seen that within other charter schools as soon as this year, for enrollment and financial reasons, based on what their charter was made of, which obviously the school is, we're now 3 years from the previous formal review and hope to never look back.
Do you have an approximate value to what would occur if we went that route?
Sure. So like I mentioned, a 1.1 debt service coverage ratio is what our metric is with the state and with our current investors. Our new investors would likely move to 1.2. Next year, that would look at 0.9, dropping to 0.86. And then when we start to increase the enrollment again after a pause, getting back to 1.06 and then hopefully to 1.16. From a days on cash on hand perspective, the state minimum now is 75 days, which again is not, we consider this it's not officially restricted fund balance, but it becomes the fund balance necessary for us to continue to operate in a way that the state sees as a viable, successfully operating public school. So under this, we would hit 76 days. We're currently at about 81 days of cash in hand. Next year, that would drop to 76, then dropping to 70, 59, and 52. So quickly becomes a large issue as far as sort of the viability within these metrics. So obviously if this were to take place, there would have to be significant operational changes as far as either a massive increase to outside revenue that isn't recognized at this point or a significant cut to expenses.
And would you agree that at that point we would not be able to secure the types of financing that are available to us today?
That's correct.
And would you think that as a business manager and professional in the community, that this opportunity would come up anytime soon again if we operated under this premise?
No, I think it'd be an uphill battle. And I think that we are only being afforded the opportunities we're seeing today because of where we've gotten. Obviously, as a successfully functioning charter school, it's not only finances, right? I mean, there's qualitative reasons that this is a great school. I more speak from the financial piece. So I don't want to belittle the successes of the academics. But from a fiscal standpoint, and there have been efficiencies made during the availability of additional federal funds that this projection takes into the account of a spend down of. So it's not like the current staffing levels and the current supports that we have that are currently supported with federal funds that will expire, that we then reduce those expenses, that we keep those expenses in hand, and that operational revenue over time is what covers that going forward too.
This is Val, just a question, but overall, when you compare the terms under which our current bondholders, you know, governing the relationship with our current bondholders versus the terms of this new credit facility, how would you how would you compare those? Is it possible to make a judgment that one is, you know, better than the other? And I ask that question is that I'm just trying to understand how I'm looking at the summary of non-binding indicative terms and conditions, how different that is from what our current obligations provide.
Sure. And I'll say that they're indicative of the environment of which the offering of investment is taking place. At the time when Odyssey was able to secure the financing for the Barley Mills campus, I don't believe that the financial metrics were in as favorable position as they are now. I think there were at the time, from my understanding of talking to our consultants that were with us then and now, and the investors themselves, that there were governance issues and leadership issues at the school. So fast forwarding 8 years from that point to where we are now, where from a financial standpoint, we are much more viable. From a governance standpoint, we received a perfect score from the state of Delaware as far as our annual report goes. And that's a way of saying that what you're reading is much more favorable from what the school would need to complete than the previous.
Remind me when the existing funding, when did we get it? Like what year?
2015.
Okay, so just as one point, the Wall Street Journal prime rate today is 8%. In 2015, it was 3.5%. And even in this sort of macro environment, we're still looking at a reduced interest rate because of the progress that the school's made in the structure of this deal. So, you know, basically every other, you know, debt we would be refinancing would be an increase of what we'd be planning to pay. But because of the progress that we've made across a whole host of metrics, financial, academic, et cetera, we're looking at somehow in a massively increased environment, a reduced interest rate, and I think reduced penalties and sort of restrictions as well.
Yes, structural restrictions would definitely be more lax with this, whether we do this restructuring of our debt now or if we do it in 18 months. Either way, we'd likely be looking at a different scenario. But it's hard pressed to say that this option will be there in this capacity in 18 months. At that point, you're looking, the risk becomes time and the economic environment.
And specifically,
that's very helpful. Thank you to both of you.
Sorry, Val, to also add to that, just to give you from the funding formula perspective, we are hamstringed by the decisions of the state OMB and then the committees thereafter on what we are given. Decisions are made by them. So if we see state level fiscal revenue reducing, we will absolutely see reducing education funding. And that is something that's completely out of our control. And I do like to live in the world of most likely outcomes and not in the world of outliers. And I do believe that the state is going to have to take steps in order to ensure the current levels of funding in the next 2 years in such a way that would allow for that to occur. Within the way that we've developed this and the way that Jeff has also developed the budgets moving forward, he's built some redundancy in there for us to be able to absorb some of that while being able to also do this refinancing and not really changing the bottom line in terms of our debt. I think that's a big key component over here. We may be taking on a dollar amount that's more, but it doesn't necessarily increase the amount that we're paying by a substantial margin. In addition to the fact that in a high inflation environment, money owed is less, right? You're better off financing in those circumstances than when you're in the opposite environment. And that's actually one of the reasons why this has become available. Is that this workaround has become available as a result of, you know, the bond market flipping, which has allowed for us to be in a very strategic position while we also tightened our belts and suffered a little bit to get to where we are today so that we can have this conversation.
That's helpful too. Thank you.
Hey, Jeff, quick question. You mentioned potential future lenders. I know you sent us over some paperwork with some draft term sheets and things like that. Is that who you're referring to in that conversation?
Yes.
And just a quick question is like, where did this group materialize from? Because I know we had been working previously with Baird, right, for a while. We had an engagement letter with them as well, too. So where did this group come from?
So actually, through our work with Baird and with Peter Spahn, they were able to work some of their connections that they've had, and based off what they were seeing within the markets, opportunities opening for a school with our specific, financial metrics, with also our demographics. So I talked a little bit about it more in the last board meeting, but these types of organizations like the Equity Facilities Fund that are backed by the Walton Foundation, generally speaking, would not have been an option that we could have gone given what our demographics are. Where they're more prioritizing probably schools that are 70% or higher free and reduced lunch. I think the market shifting has basically opened up their ability to look for increased investment, but it's something that we are hoping that we could take advantage of now.
It's actually Brian and Peter who brought these to us. Brian, right?
Yep, Brian.
Yeah, and Peter from Baird who brought these to us, Elias.
Yeah, and I'm just curious because I know if we're going through a formal process, we'd put out a call for bids and people would propose financing options to us. Now we can look at them and see which ones make sense. And I'm just wondering what kind of due diligence was done to kind of basically understand, you know, whether or not this, and I understand relative, depending on our credit status and things like that, that's changed over the years as well too. So our current financing is different than what it would be now, right? And if we had the financial position we're in now in 2015, we'd have different rates as well too that we'd be paying. But I'm just trying to understand how much due diligence we've done in terms of finding an appropriate, you know, set of financing conditions that make sense for the school.
So these options So the option that we're exploring specifically that we're talking about with EFF would be in lieu of what I think you're referring to with actually taking the bonds to the call date. Because as we've seen at this point, there has been, I guess, minimal to little interest from our current investors to negotiate to terminate them at an earlier date. So the comp has essentially been taking our current bonds to the call date, which is November of 2024 to February of 2025, depends on some of the legalities of 90 days, et cetera. So what our consultants are doing are comparing what they would project at that time in an open market versus what we're being offered in this specific tool or instrument from EFF to do it now. So those are some of the figures they put together. Obviously nothing is final. Even the term sheet provided by EFF just shows that we've made it through their green light as far as their background information, and they're willing to work with the school, but that's not a final document. We're still hoping to see if there's other areas of the term sheet that are negotiable. Brian works diligently to make sure that we are getting sort of the best deal that we can get.
Have they at least brought us, let's say, one or two other options to consider as well, or is this the only one that's really come forward as part of that?
So to actually refinance our current debt, no. We don't have any other options outside of a call date at this point. We had some conversations with other CFDI firms that would be interested in assisting with new money projects, but not necessarily taking on the whole entirety of the current debt.
Well, and I know I had to miss the last call, so keep me honest here, but wasn't the position of our current bondholders that if we were to refinance early, we would still owe them the totality of interest payments through the end? Like they would want to be made whole?
Yes, so, and they would be. Yeah.
So this structure lets us act earlier.
Correct.
Right. And less expensively than outright refining it, making the current bondholders whole out of our pockets.
Correct.
Or waiting till the end of the current term at the existing interest rates and sort of seeing what's available at that time. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So what Brian has been doing is comping our situation, and we don't have to look far.
This meeting is being recorded.
Thank you.
We don't have to look far because one of our sister schools recently refinanced their bonds and had new money taken out. But Brian compares what he's seeing in the market versus what he thinks, based on our fiscal metrics, we could see in an open market. Now, obviously, there's a lot for 18 months, but that's kind of what these firms do to the best of their ability. And the aspect too with this type of option is that it would allow us ahead of the bond call date to draw new money for capital projects now for the improvements that we know we need to continue the sustainability of the organization.
Now this calls for, I guess this calls for borrowing some money initially to, let's say, pay for athletic facilities, right? And then potentially refinancing the entire bond issue, maybe with additional debt at the end of the current bonds expiring, right?
With EFF, that would not be the case, that this would lock us in now and we would not be calling the bonds in a year and a half. This sort of supplants that.
So basically, we just wait till those bonds expire and then basically.
Yeah, it's kind of
these
like
guys.
Yeah, if you can imagine like putting the money in escrow, that's kind of like what it is.
Well, I guess the question too is, I know we'd be probably getting some initial upfront funding from them to do some facilities upgrades.
Yes.
At the current rate that they listed, 5.12, but does that rate apply in, let's say, February of 25 when we want to refinance or basically draw on the entirety of that bond rate, or do they go back to some sort of market conditions to say, well, your $3 or $4 million that you borrowed is at 5.12, but the remaining $30 million is going to be at a 6.9% rate or something. Does this lock in a rate for the entirety of, let's say, the amount of money that we want to finance?
The last portion. So yes, it does lock it in. It locks in the refinance portion and the new money that'd be associated with it. So the refinance portion, I believe that the organization at this point is willing to refinance at the existing maturity. So over the next 20 years. What they're willing to do, though, is for new money, stretch that for 30 years. So that's where we also make some savings. Now, the other aspect to consider, in which Brian is currently working numbers up, is the differentiation between taking a refi now at the remaining 20 years or how much new money could be created if we wait the 18 months, go to the bond market for a refi of 30 years at that point. So for 30 years of the refi and 30 years of new money versus 20 years now of the refi and 30 years now of new money. So all that's being analyzed by our bond contract.
And I guess my last question is, there seems to be a cap of $37 million in terms of borrowed funds. Is that just a mark on the wall right now, and can that number change? In other words, as we go forward, do we want to move that up to, let's say, 39 or 42 million or whatever the case is at the time when we decide to refinance the entirety of the amount in a year and a half or 2 years? Are we going to be locked into the 37 million, or can we leave ceiling for more money if we need it?
My understanding, so the ceiling will be whenever we decide to move forward with this. So it won't be essentially like a line of credit. That would be another deal or another option. The ability that we have to borrow new money with this entity, my understanding is long, they're willing to make that number whatever we want it to be, where we could continue to meet the metrics that they're requiring. Where we're starting with that, so the number we see on there is based on the initial inquiry intake form where they asked about capital projects, and the only one listed at that point was the turf field project. However, we do know that there are other capital infrastructure needs here at the school. So we're going to be working with them on, in a sense, backing into a number what our current debt service is, the amount of new money we have, where it is, because we know that we've been projecting based on this number that we feel pretty good about where the growth of the school is at this number. And so we know what we have at that point. Adding new debt after that would likely either need to be a separate tax-exempt bond deal or another type of bank loan.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that that up to number was not a fixed number, and that, not that we need to borrow it all. They could have 75 million on there, right? And we'll say, well, we can't afford 75 million. We only want to borrow X amount. But at least at the time, because in a year and a half, you know, we'll have a better picture of the landscape. And
well, so, go ahead.
Are the amounts that we're talking about typical for what they're like, what other deals are doing? Are we on the high end? Are we on the low end? Or do we have any?
We're probably on the higher end for where they deal with.
And we're an atypical deal too. We're not, this is something new that they're venturing in, that this particular group is venturing into.
Right? Does this roll like the bus loans and things like that all up under it, or those stay separate?
Those would stay separate because they're on the shorter term. We typically haven't gone out past 60 months on the bus loans just because the life of the asset's a little bit different. We are pretty confident these buildings will last another 50 years with the proper maintenance. So that's why they're comfortable moving towards allowing for new money to go to the 30-year.
Okay.
Anyone have any other questions for Jeff on this portion? Really? Nobody
else? Hey, Jeff, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry. Let me turn my other volume. Let me turn my other volume off. Sorry, I'm on two devices. You said we're a new kind of breed for this company, I guess, or a new kind of borrower. What is different about us versus their traditional borrower? I understand that they tend to look at, you know, different demographics and such, but in terms of the dollar value, are we typically not common for them, or is this something that they typically work in terms of these ranges, et cetera?
I do think based on the conversation that we've had both with the entity and with our consultants that they have intimated that we are probably on the higher end of what they've typically dealt with. They did a deal actually with Free Air Charter School last summer, I think, to the tune of $5 million or less, I'm pretty sure, to assist them with some capital infrastructure and I think even a museum. So that's just another example of, I think the charter schools they deal with generally aren't quite at the magnitude that we are, because a lot of times they're assisting with underserved and underprivileged demographics. So generally speaking, those from a charter school perspective, they haven't quite as large from a volume standpoint.
Okay. The other question I had, and I think my mic on my other computer wasn't working that I was talking on, but the when we talk about the proceeds amounts, it says up to $37 million. And I know you commented on that I guess that number is flexible, right? And so I just wanted to make sure that when we look at numbers like that, you know, we can put 50 or 60 million down there, for example, right? We may not want to borrow that, but it leaves us that cap for the next year and a half or 2 years, where once we go to actually fully redo the bonds on our end, that there is room if we need to borrow money at the lower interest rate in these bonds to make sure that we're getting all the facilities updated that we need to, et cetera, that tend to cost a significant amount of money.
To move forward with a term sheet like this, we wouldn't be going back to the bond market specifically as a part of our refi or the new money that's associated with these projects in 18 months. This would be kind of all encompassing for now. There would be nothing precluding us outside of our own, you know, fiscal metrics from going back in X number of years and borrowing, you know, $10 to $12 million to complete a planetarium or whatever at the time the school deems as a priority from a capital standpoint. But we do, obviously, we are the same way as like a mortgage with a home, is that each time you have a deal, there's closing costs associated and it gets kind of pricey to do this often. Outside of this initial, what we can get from new money that would stay within debt service, we would sort of be capped to what the projections say we can do within their, what they consider their debt coverage ratios.
Okay. Yeah. And I just want to make sure we have a number. We have a, not that we need to take all that money, but in a year and a half, we may say we've completed a number of facilities upgrades, but we still need, let's say, $6 million to build a gym or an auditorium or whatever it is that we want to build, right? And so at that time, when we're going to refinance the bonds, if we have enough headroom in there and it makes sense financially in terms of interest and all, we could potentially borrow that money and keep it as cash on hand to then use to build these facilities rather than starting up a second loan or a third loan from second and third party organizations, just roll it all up into the bond. And so we can make that decision at the time, but I think as long as we have the approval to borrow up to a certain amount, I think the higher that number is, the better. We don't have to use it all, but I think getting approved for the highest possible amount, I think it's a good option to have.
So not the finance guy in the group and just making sure it's not a Ponzi scheme. The EFF people are coming to us because they want to make money off us. And the best way they can do that is to get in before our bonds go into the open market in 18 months. They can come in a little early, pay that delta. So they're going to put that cash out to the difference between the 5% we're going to pay them and the 12% we're paying, because they're going to get that loan for 20 years. And we're going to ask for an additional $3 million for 30 years. So they're coming in going, let's sit down once, a year and a half before the bonds come up. What do you guys need? We're going to be a long-term partner. This is how we're going to make our money. Is that the way it works?
Yes and no. So they're a nonprofit. So they're not generally in it to make money. The way that they're able to help charter schools out, and the needs of the charter schools differ from place to place. For us, we're really trying to restructure our debt and complete a couple extra capital projects. They're able to bridge that gap between the two with a grant. So they're backed by philanthropic groups that say, we believe in charter schools, we believe in quality education, we believe that they need us to go, because we know how hard it is for them to, you know, get tax exempt bonds on the open market because of their sheer size is not big enough, or they aren't able to get a market rate on their own. So if something like this was available back in 2015, it may have been something that we could have leveraged at the time. How they're, like, the logistics of how they make our bondholders whole, I think has something to do with the treasury markets, and they're able to sort of utilize the funds that we pay and the grant back funds to make it whole, and then it becomes their own as sort of like a loan agency.
Okay, so as a nonprofit, they're truly investing in us.
Yes.
And they're backed by large philanthropic organizations like the Walton Foundation, who's specifically invested in the success of charters and school choice.
And because our demographics are a little different and our finances are so good, we're a little more attractive because we're fiscally sound, but we're still hitting the demographics. So we're less of a risk, but they're still able to help the demographics.
We're probably less attractive to them due to our demographics. However, because of the growth of this organization over the years, the sheer volume that we have of students that participate in the free and reduced lunch program, though we're closer to about half the percentage that they may see, the sheer volume based on our total enrollment may be the size of an entire charter school that they've been serving. So if we have 600 to 700 kids that qualifies for, that's much larger than that they see. So I think that was their way of being able to still support their mission and vision while also being able to fiscally handle a debt deal of our size.
They probably have a mandate on how much they're supposed to deploy on a yearly basis. And we are close enough to their target from a demographic. We're not right there, but we're close enough and we're stable enough that, you know, as they think about sustainability, they're a nonprofit and they want to continue to have people pay back so they can keep funding. So it's like, we nail the financial quality and we're really, really close in the demographics, so they can sort of check the boxes and still be doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Thanks for dumbing it down for me.
Not dumbing it down.
Well, no, but I do want to recognize sort of the potential partnership that I want to give EFF a lot of credit for the amazing things that they do, that they're not trying to make money off of us, that actually it's intentional that they don't, that they're really just trying to help us out.
But we do really only get to ask for money once.
With them, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to ask.
But the key here, remember, the key here is that ratio. So it isn't about like being able to borrow per se, make sure that we can borrow up to 50 million. They don't care about the number. They care about the debt ratio.
So if we can support the fact that we could borrow up to $50 million with them and still maintain our metrics and maintain our days of cash on hand and the debt coverage ratio, they'd be open to it. But I think realistically, on a conservative basis, we wouldn't be able to raise that quite that high based on where market rates are.
Yeah, and my point about having a higher ceiling, not that we want to borrow, was when we originally purchased the campus, we borrowed $33 million, but the cost was in the high 20s, right? And so we had several million left over to help upgrade the facilities because they were office buildings and to convert them into classrooms. So there was additional cash on hand that we had to be able to go through and do all those upgrades because the organization didn't have the funding at the time, the money at the time to do that. And so all I'm suggesting is that make sure we're not locked into a situation where we don't have flexibility, and not that we need, like I said, that we need to borrow that much money, but if we have a ceiling on what we can borrow and we figure out what that right number is at the time when we pull a trigger on it, just make sure that we have enough in there, and maybe 37 million is the top, I don't know, but like you said, it's based on our financials. I'm not saying borrow more than we can borrow. What I'm saying is borrow the right amount.
Who are working those numbers for us.
Right.
Our place is worth more now because we got a Wegmans.
That's right. Okay, do any other questions about this portion? Okay. Why don't we move on to the facilities improvements. I know some of the questions that I keep getting is, all right, we want to build a field, we want to build a gym, but we also have rugs that need to be repaired. We have elevators that need to be implemented. We need improvements in the buildings. Why are we moving to the outside before we move to the inside?
Sure.
Or how can we encompass it all?
There are several aspects. Number one is to make sure, again, that we create a sustainable model. And part of that is building in whatever depreciated items we have or depreciation that we see in the buildings needs to be built into our reserve fund in such a way for us to be able to do that. In terms of becoming a sustainable school, that's what needs to happen. If we use money that we borrow to replace rugs, we're going to need to replace rugs again in 5 years. And then what are we going to do? If we use money that we borrow for an item like that, that doesn't have the ability to create long-term sustainability or even create an attractive community, community model or something that will attract community members, it's gone. And then you're ended up paying for it. For 30 years. So that's one component to really think about as we move forward. It is our responsibility to find ways to be able to make sure that we have reserve funds. And typically we do, and we use that to repair roofs and stuff like that. We're already using a model like that to do that. But that's one aspect of it. I think the bigger picture here, specifically to the why the outside first, is because that's what everybody sees. You see the outside and you create a beacon for the community, and then you have more investment in the community. So once you have success of a project like this, and it isn't just a field we're talking about, we're talking about a stadium with two auxiliary fields. This makes it the only facility around that has that. That becomes an attractive community product to help schools that don't have green space, to help some of our private organizations, to create partnerships with soccer clubs and lacrosse clubs and all this kind of, you know, outward kind of attention to Odyssey that allows for people to invest more in Odyssey, that allows people to want to enroll their kids in Odyssey, not just because we have a great, you know, education to offer, but also we have just a great facility. We have a state-of-the-art facility. So part of, and I can't quantify this for you because we haven't done it yet, but typically what happens is that when you create something that becomes a beacon, investment naturally comes, right? Build it and they will come. It's just an important concept in business that we use. And so this is an outwardly facing idea that will allow us to create more investment internally that then allows us to spend the money that we want to spend on those other things. But if I, for example, and I don't want to harp on a carpet, but if I change a carpet, nobody's going to know that we changed the carpet. If I put a state-of-the-art stadium outside, everybody's going to know that Odyssey Charter has the state-of-the-art stadium that's outside.
And I'll add too that, using the example of a carpet, those types of maintenance things we need to build capacity to handle within our operational budget.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to.
Yeah, and so it's not like that those types of things are being ignored per se and are not going to be gotten to because of a turf field project. The turf field project is to help us enhance the sustainability of our enrollment. And by doing that, we'll be able to build in proper operational budgets within the facilities department or however we want to do it, where we can start to address some of those things. We've also been able to, through different forms of funding, address some of those as well. The expansion grant has allowed us to sort of revamp the way we do some of our furnitures and fixtures in the classroom with the different types of desks or science labs or things like that. And the enhanced MCI funding that we got from the state, which it appears we may be getting a similar amount next year, that's, you know, obviously to be determined by the governor's budget, has allowed us to do flooring adjustments and things like that for ways that if we do have a one-time influx, that now's the time for some of that.
And,
so
and the elevator. The elevator in the high school has already...
That project's underway.
The project's underway, and the funding is already there.
And to address, you know, specifically as we talk about in the strategic plan, we talk about, and Elias has mentioned, the use of all of our buildings, bringing building number 27 up to code and retrofit for classrooms includes adding an elevator that would address both the lower school and whatever building 27 becomes. Just like the elevator here in building 21 also serves building 22. So in theory, at that point, all of our buildings will have an elevator.
So I think that all makes sense. I think when you said when we replace a carpet, nobody sees it, I don't think you meant that, right? Because the staff and the kids who are in that room experience it every day, right?
Well, I mean a larger scale.
Exactly.
Selling the vision.
So I wonder, and you guys probably already have this, but is facilities partnering with the deans of each building or whoever to develop not major infrastructure project lists, but things like rugs, whatever it is, and are they working with you from a budget perspective so that we can have a schedule of, hey, you know, this rug's kind of nearing the end of its life, we're going to make sure we allocate next year versus this one probably just has some stains and we can go 2 years. Like how are we tracking that?
Short answer, yes.
Okay.
That sort of communication does take place. And I'll give kudos to our facilities manager, John Stewart. He does a great job of sort of cataloging what the needs are within the building. So he sort of has within his budget, sort of a five-year plan budget that includes a full carpet replacement in our intermediate school and upgrading the floors in building 20 and changing the doors of building 23 and all of that. So and, you know, on a monthly basis, he's taking feedback from, you know, the leadership stakeholders of each building to understand better.
So maybe if there are concerns that you're hearing about, is the right path, you know, talk to your dean and they can engage with facilities and you can find out, like, where on the schedule are you? So you have a sense of, is it next year? Is it 2 years? Is it next month? Is that, like, openly available information?
Yeah, I would say it becomes dynamic based on the specific year and the funding options. But I think it can.
What is the plan?
Yes, okay. And sort of where the priorities kind of, yes.
It's getting worked on.
Yeah, I mean, he does it at a very high level. Shoot, for example, he'll tell us building 23's roof has about 5 years left. Building 21's roof has about 2 years left. So you start to think about, well, what is that going to look like long term for us to be able to do that? And then we build it into the operating budget accordingly. Not only do those meetings happen within the deans and with Jeff, they also now happen organizationally. So we've just instituted a new structure where we have three brain, I don't know, what are we calling those, Renee? We're
summits,
yeah, leadership summits, where organizational components and academic components get together and problem solve all of these things. Whether it is the matrix that we're talking about or the schedule or repaving an entryway or making sure that we take considerations that impact the overall operation of the school into the academic program. And in some aspects in the past, they've been kind of in silos. And then we end up getting into the year and running into problems because we haven't used, you know, the proper, you know, techniques to make sure that we're anticipating well. And now we are actively doing that. We already had one session. We have two more sessions scheduled for May and one the beginning of June to be able to do this.
I think some of the other, I just want to, because I asked you about this, so just in case people haven't heard it, right? Some of the other questions we got were, where's the playground going to be for intermediate school, stuff like that. And your plan is to establish stakeholder groups and get more input on how we execute, right? This is like what you're talking about now is that we're going to do something. Right. And then more folks will be engaged with like the design and the layout and all that stuff.
Correct. And the specific engineering involved with the project to know for sure what's environmentally viable. I mean, at this point, it's a concept and it's a design, but obviously it's a draft design. Yeah. But it would be, you know, not best practice at this point for us to move forward without sort of an approval from the government before.
Which you're not seeking in tonight's meeting.
No,
we're not seeking any approvals today. Yeah, and there are specific plans available for that as well. In addition to adding green space for both the lower school and the intermediate school as a result of having that area available to them, they're going to have specific green space to play.
All weather,
right? So play has been considered as part of this process, in addition to making sure that we enhance some of our current things in order to help with that. And there's a, you know, we're going to look at parent input for that. Our parent council will be involved in that as well. We'll have feedback and stakeholder sessions to figure that out in the coming weeks. I think it's just important that we get to the point that we can do that.
So more on the field project?
Well, I mean, the fields, if Odyssey doesn't fill out and round out its sports offerings, you're not going to keep high school kids.
And we've heard that over and over again.
That's the number one
students because of
sort of exit interview factor that we've seen.
Because middle school, we have like a substantial amount of activities.
It's robust,
right? Yeah.
And our middle school teams are really good.
Yeah,
we're hearing them on top state, you know, charts, all state this, all state that. It's like those are our kids that we nurtured for 8-9 consecutive years, and everybody else is getting the credit for it.
So for the field project, how are we managing that? What would we do for that to pay for it, to get it going? What are we talking?
So for the financing options, obviously the we basically will have multiple options. One being, you know, negotiate a deal with an entity like EFF where we restructure our current debt and borrow new money in a way that our debt service isn't impacted in the near term or long term. Another option we have identified and is viable is a bank loan option that would bridge the gap between the point of construction of a capital project and the point where we can refinance our bonds at the call date and then roll all of that debt up together. So that's basically what we're looking at. And we have term sheets for multiple entities at this point. So we have good options. The goal essentially is that because of the financing that the school has had over the past 8 years, that it's built almost essentially, lack of a better word, it's built up enough credit where we can take on a project of this magnitude without necessarily having to impact our bottom line at this point.
So at our next board meeting, you're going to be asking for us for a decision for...
Well, we're hoping for a decision to move forward with the project concept. Obviously, we're not at the point yet where we're spending dollars on it.
Okay. That's my idea. It's like, how can we know how much we're spending if we don't know how much we have to spend?
Correct.
We don't know if EFF's coming through, and then if that doesn't come through, we don't know what other loans we have coming through.
Correct. So it would likely be almost a contingent approval.
So right now you want to get approval. You want us to have approval at the next meeting for the idea of how we're going to, and then you're going to come up with the stakeholder groups to come up with that plan.
Correct. And then there's going to probably be a separate recommendation that gets brought forward. I don't believe it'll be ready in time for the April meeting, but soon thereafter, of future financing, both for this project and potentially for restructuring of our current debt.
And I imagine the approval in the next meeting would also empower you to negotiate in good faith, like telling lender,
correct,
the future board is finances, supportive of this project, and here's what we need to do to get there.
Absolutely.
Anyone have any questions? This is the time to ask them, folks. Wait, is there anything else we need to discuss tonight that we can?
No, I don't have a question, just a comment. What I heard in the beginning when, Ilya, you were telling us about future goals, it was music to a teacher's ears. Namely, the lower teacher-student ratio, the supports for teachers, then addressing behavioral problems through, self-regulation classes, improving intercultural competencies, which is so important for a bicultural, bilingual school, time to decompress. I loved all that. How confident are we can achieve that next year, and what will it take? What increase in staff?
We are confident that we will be able to make significant strides next year based on our current budget analysis. We have already tentatively been able to secure a lot of these things that we were speaking of as a result of kind of working in the background significantly to be able to do this. What exactly it's going to look like depends on what happens in May, right? Because that's when we find out exactly how much money we have to spend. And obviously we have other factors that may contribute a little bit, but I would say we're supremely confident that we'll be able to take step forwards, despite the fact that I still want to emphasize it's going to be a little bit painful for a little bit longer until we stabilize the enrollment. And what I mean by that, I'll try to be as specific as I can. When you look across the bands of the schools, you don't have like this and then that, and then this and then that. You know what I mean? So part of that's going to be the high school is properly enrolled across all grade levels, which is still 2 years out from happening. But it's getting there. And we did really well this year. I mean, I believe our projection, for example, in terms of hitting our targets, we're well ahead of where we were last year from the enrollment perspective, which means that we are going to be able to make sure that the families that really want to be here are going to be here. And the preview night was just a phenomenal success. And that has been a huge step forward for the organization in order for us to be able to create a more confident model that we're going to be able to hit those targets. So can I say everything with certainty? No. But I definitely know that we're going to be allocating more resources, being very strategic about the planning of new studies and a new approach, a more restorative approach. Teaching self-regulation as an actual course is something that is not just being talked about, it's being implemented. We've already looked at curricula for that. So we're very advanced in the process. So we're definitely confident that what we're saying, we're going to be able to implement. Can I give you an exact metric of what that's going to look like? Not quite yet.
You know, I think it would be helpful, not for tonight, but either next meeting or maybe even in May. So we're basically saying we're signing up for 3 years of some things are going to be a little tough, but we're going to work our way through it. And it's for the long-term vision, right? I think in order to make sure everybody has eyes wide open of here's what we're signing up for. Like we know there are risks if we don't, but here's, so there are no surprises. It might be good if you could think about this year, what do you think the top 5 pain points were? Next year, which of those gets better and what gets added, right? Because at different points in growth, you're going to have new pain points. And just for the 3 years, like here's what we think is going to be hard. Here's what's going to get better this year. New stuff that's going to be hard. And I don't think we need really detailed metrics, but just high level themes. And then we can all be talking about them next year. I'm like, hey, okay, we're going into this year. Now let's get ready for this. And just make sure everybody has a really good idea of what to expect.
I can do that in May.
That's fine. I think that's fine.
Sure. Yes. I think we see some improvement. I mean,
I'm very confident we're going to see improvement.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Even over the summer, we can work on it. But then we'll know like what to work on over the summer.
So right.
Being proactive instead of reacting.
It's just, I also want to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, this board is a group of volunteers. It's putting in a lot of effort into these things. And we provided hundreds of pages of information for now. So, you know, I want to like, it's probably a little bit because of the way that I'm wired. I like to get one thing done, move on to the next one, get one thing done, move on to the next one. And for me, this is such a defining moment for the school right now. I'm very passionate about making sure that we get this right now. And so I'm not dismissing or saying that it's not a top priority for me, but I need a little bit of time.
It's fine. Just something to add to your agenda. That's all. Just adding more. List. As long as before the summer, so that way we know over the summer. Right. But it doesn't have to be more.
Just to speak to how much Odyssey's finances have changed since 2015. Odyssey's budget in 2015 was $13 million a year.
Yeah.
Wow. we're probably within the. By the time this charter is completed, we're probably looking at about 4x in that.
Well, and that speaks to where they're talking about the expansion. It's like, we don't want to expand to, you know, a colossal number, but we want to expand to the point where we can sustain and we can be comfortable where we are. And in the facility where we are in these buildings, we have a certain trajectory that we have to fulfill. And unfortunately, that's what all these numbers are for, and that's where we're heading, and that's where we have to meet.
These aren't your exact words, but I find it interesting that you're talking about classes to teach basically behavior. I just had a conversation with someone this week, and he said he was asking, you know, a teacher, well, who teaches manners and respect? And he's like, her answer was, that's supposed to be taught at home. He's like, well, it's supposed to be, but it isn't being.
Right.
So, I mean, it shouldn't have to be taught at school, but in the world we have right now, it does need to be included.
It's part of teaching the whole child, right? And that's where we are right now. And we're responding to the environment that we're in. And it is a very unique environment that probably hasn't existed in history. So we're going to be as forward thinking as we can in doing that.
I think there'll be.
Any final comments from anyone?
Just a quick comment. You mentioned growth. And so I know we've been growing a lot over the years, and we probably haven't been growing as uniformly as we want to be. And I know we put some numbers on the wall for our minor modification, et cetera, but I think we need to really think about putting in place a more strategic vision of how we plan to grow, because we're overloading some areas and some areas are understaffed in terms of, let's say, students, et cetera. And so we don't have a very uniform distribution across the school. And so we need to figure out a way how we're going to get to a more uniform distribution of students, staff, et cetera, across the schools over the years. I think that's important as well, too. That's all.
Agreed. Sounds good.
I move we adjourn the meeting.
A second. I'll third that.
All in favor?
Aye.
And one final thing, if you have any other information that you need that we haven't provided to you, which I can't imagine what that could be, or if you have any additional questions that you need that are rolling around your head you didn't want to share tonight, please reach out to Elia or to Jeff so they can help you get to where you need to be. Thank you all. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Wonderful. Have a lovely evening. Adjourn. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, Anna Maria, for scheduling this meeting, and to Jeff and to Elia.
Thanks, Val. See ya.
See ya.